Okay, we begin here on the bottom of Lamed Vav Amud Bet. Rami Le Rav Papa Bar Shmuel the Rav Yosef Isavar Rav Yehuda Bikdushata Kaima. Is it really true that Rav Yehuda believes that the Shfuya retains her Kedusha and we don't worry about the fact that she was maybe Nivelet to her cap doors? Again, we discussed this yesterday as to two reasons why possibly Rav Yehuda believes that a woman who is held in captivity is considered to be Bikdushata Kaima. One is particular to the issue of Knas, which is Shelo Yehei Chote Niskar. Because if we say that, because of this Chashash, we say that this woman really had Biyah, then the individual rapes her is the beneficiary of the fact that there's no Knas paid over here. So Rav Yehuda says, as far as Knas is concerned, we're going to say that he has to pay the Knas. And we also said that would be true with regards to the Ketubah. We would grant her a ketubah of 200 because this is a woman that we want to make desirable, a woman that we want to help out. And for those two reasons, we said that in those particular cases, Rabbi Yehuda says that a shfuya has a din of being bikdushata kaimo. That was the shito of Rabbo, who said that it's esheno nichote niskar. On the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan believed that Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Dosa had the same opinion, and that Rabbi Yehuda really means across the board, that this woman, Bikdushata Kaima. So the Gemara here is posing the question, as we mentioned yesterday. This question is really on the Shito of Rabbi Yochanan Anan and Rabbo. Because the question here will derive from a place where it's not Chote Niskar, and therefore, for Rabbo, it's not one of the places that Rabbi Yehuda believes that the woman or the Shvuya has a din of Bikdushata Kaima. On the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan, who thinks everywhere, Rabbi Yehuda thinks that, then this question is being posed. Rami Le Rav Papa Bar Shmuel the Rav Yosef this question. So he says, "V'savar Rav Yehuda b'kedushta kaima v'atanya." We have a braita. Hagioret shenit gaira. We have a woman who converts v'ra'ata dam, and then she sees dam. Rashi says over here, on basically on the day that she converted, she menstruates. She ends up being a nida. Rav Yehuda Omer dayashata. She gets from that moment forward. Rabbi Yossi Omer, harihi ochol ha-nashim, she is similar to any other woman, umitama me'eit le'eit, umipkida le'pkida, and she is mitama le'mafreya, retroactively 24 hours, or the last check, the lesser of 24 hours and the last check. This is based on the Mishnah in the beginning of the Gemara Nida. The Chachamim instituted that a woman has a din of tuma retroactively after she has a sighting of dam. The reason is because a woman becomes tmeya tumat nida when the dam leaves the mekor, leaves the rechem. So the dam leaves the rechem, that's when the woman becomes tmeya. But that doesn't mean that she cites the dam at that moment, because between the exit of the rechem and exiting her body, there is the vaginal canal. So there could be time between the time that the dam leaves the rechem and the time that the dam leaves her body. For that reason, the Rabbanon instituted that a woman who sees dam, she will be tmeya retroactively the lesser of 24 hours, or mipkida lipkida. It's the shita of the Chachamim. There are other shitot of Hillel and Shammai there in the Mishnah. That's the shita that is the halacha, which is that retroactively we say that she is tmeya for taharot. If she came into contact with taharot in the last 24 hours, or after the last time she checked, we'll assume that she is tmeya because of the fact that it takes time for the dam to exit her body. So now, in this instance, we have a woman who converts. In converting, she now has dam nida. It's clear that the dam before she converted has no bearing. There is no tuma, there's no tumat nida for a nachriya. So because of that, the most period of time that it could be that she is tmeya retroactively is from the moment that she converted. What Rabbi Yehuda says is dayashata. We say whenever she sees the dam, from that point forward she is tmeya prospectively. There is no retroactive tuma. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi says she's like any other woman. She's like any other woman that the dam she sees now is retroactively tmeya. As Rashi points out, the reasoning being that Rabbi Yehuda says that the Takanat Chamim or the Gzirat Chachamim with regards to Tumala Mafreya is built of two components. One is Meit Leit, the 24 hours prior, and the other one is Mipikida L'Pikida, the last time she checked. So the reason that Rabbi Yehuda says Bayah Shata here is because we can't accomplish mi'eit le'eit. 24 hours is not relevant here. 24 hours ago, she was a Nachriya. She wasn't Jewish. So because of that, mi'eit le'eit is not relevant. Since mi'eit le'eit is not relevant, they were also not gozer, mi'pikida le'pikida, and we just say Bayah Shata prospectively. Rabbi Yossi says, whatever we can accomplish, we'll accomplish. So, retroactively to the time of her conversion, she'll be Tmeyah, unless she did a check after that. And if she did a check after that, that will be Mimayit, that will reduce the amount of time retroactively that she is Tmeyah. What the Gemara is after here is interesting, because the Gemara here is talking about a Gioret. In our Mishnah, Rabbi Huda is talking about a Shvuyah. So what the seemingly is happening here is the Gemara is questioning from Gioret to Shvuyah, and that's based on the remainder of this Braita, which is V'tzricha la'amtim gimel chodoshim. She has to wait 3 months before she marries. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yossi matir le'ares v'linaseh miyad. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi says she can get married, get engaged, get married right away. So now, this part is quite problematic. Why would Rabbi Yehuda say she has to wait 3 months? Waiting of 3 months, we have bumped into all over in Yevamot, again here in Ketubot, but the idea being that we want to separate between pregnancies or conceptions. We want to know when this woman conceived, or we want to know who is the father of this child. 3 months gives us a clear window to determine if the woman is already pregnant, or she became pregnant after. So in normal cases, we'll bump into this again on today's daf, where a woman gets divorced, a woman loses her husband. We want her to wait 3 months until she marries again to ensure we know whether the father of the child was the first husband or the second husband. So to over here, this woman who is converting, Rabbi Yehuda says she's got to wait 3 months because we want to know if she was pregnant and she conceived shelo b'kedusha, or the conception of the baby is born b'kedusha. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi says she can get married right away. So now, why does Rabbi Yehuda require the waiting of 3 months? This woman wasn't necessarily married before. This woman wasn't in a relationship before. And now we're saying after she converts, she's got to wait 3 months. That means that Rabbi Yehuda worries about the fact that this woman had biyah, that she engaged in biyah, that she was involved in intimate relationships prior to her conversion. Now still, even with that, what is the comparison? The Tosafot suggests over here, it's an interesting idea, but he says that this woman, when she's coming to convert, Rabbi Yossi says she's going to protect herself from having biyah. She knows she's going to convert, and therefore she's going to do things that make sure that she does not become impregnated, because she wants to make sure that the babies that she has now are b'kedusha if she's going to convert. How come Rabbi Yehuda says that that's not sufficient? So what Rabbi Yehuda says is, despite the fact that she knows and she's going to convert over here, the Ovdei Kochavim got the better of her. That culture that she was involved in, that caused her to have biyah, intimate relations, even though she knew she was going to convert. So now we would say, al achad kama v'kama for a shvuyah, someone who's held in captivity where she has no choice and she has no free will, certainly they took advantage of her. That's the question of the Gemara. If by Gioret we make that assumption, certainly we will make that assumption by a Shvuyah. So how come Rabbi Yehuda over here suggests you have to wait 3 months? And by the case of Shvuyah, he says that she is Bikdushata Kaima. The Gemara's answer is, Amalei Gioret Ashvuyah Karomit? You're asking a question from a Gioret to a Shvuyah? Gioret lo mintra nafsho. A Gioret doesn't protect herself from intimate relationships. Shvuyah mintera nafsha. On the other hand, someone who's in captivity, she protects herself. She doesn't want to be involved in these relationships. She has no connection to these captors, and therefore she doesn't allow it to happen, or she doesn't let herself be taken advantage of. In the Havamina, what you're suggesting is the case, which is the Gioret has the ability to protect herself and to stop this happening. The Shvuyah is subject to the captors. That's the Havamina of the question. The answer of the Gemara is that in both cases, we don't assume that there was intentional or forced biyah. Our fear with the Shvuyah is that afkara nafsha, that she figures, I'm just stuck here forever, I may as well just give in, or I think it'll help my situation out. We're not assuming here that it was a case of rape by the captors, but rather that the woman gives in thinking that she has no hope or thinking that she has no way out. And therefore the Gemara says that by Gioret, where she is going to convert, but she doesn't really care about being Afkara Nafsha, so over there we're going to assume that there's a problem. Over here by the Shvuya, we're not going to assume that she is Afkara Nafsha. In a second we'll see a question, which that's not so simple, but we're going to assume she's not Afkara Nafsha. Now Tosafot and many of the Rishonim ask, wait a minute, why don't we ask from our Mishnah? In our Mishnah we have Gioret, and we have Shvuya, and Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah only says by Shvuya that she is B'kdusha Ta'akaima. How come he doesn't say it by Gioret? Why did the Gemara go to the Braita instead of asking that from our Mishnah? So one of two things you could say. In our Mishnah, you could say that Rabbi Yehuda says Shvuya V'hua Din the Gioret, based on the logic that was just explained here, that if he says it by Shvuya, where she's not in control of her environment, then certainly he would say it by Gioret. So that's one way we could say it, that in the Mishnah, it's not clear that he disagrees with Gioret. Tosafot says the reason is, in the Mishnah, you could say the mode be Gioret Shein Laknas, the Vadaihi Bechazkat Be'ulah. There's a difference. Our Mishnah is talking about the fact that, is a woman a Be'ulah or not a Be'ulah? It's not a question of did she have Bi'ah in the last little time frame, or in the 3 months prior to her conversion. Is did she ever have Bi'ah in her life? Because Knas is only an entitlement to someone who is a Be'ulah. So that question you could answer in the affirmative and say, look, by Shvuya, Kedushata Kaima. Gioret, okay, she probably is a Be'ulah. Forget about whether in the last 3 months she was Nivelet, but she probably is a Be'ulah. And that would not be a stira to the fact that a Shvuya is Kedushata Kaima. But the bright over here suggests is that even in close proximity to the time that she converts, we still worry about her having Bi'ah. That means that we think women are not going to protect themselves in these situations, or are going to be afkar nafsha. So clearly, if a gioret is afkar nafsha, then maybe a shvuya would be. The Gemara's answer is that's not the case. That shvuya and gioret are different. And shvuya protects herself, a gioret does not protect herself. Now, Tosfot says over here about shvuya minter nafsha, he says, v'im tomar v'ha k'tana nami mayri. We're even talking about a k'tana over here, delo minter nafsha. A k'tana cannot protect herself or figure out what's going on. She doesn't have a sense of right and wrong. She doesn't really know what's going on. And maybe she would give in or she would be taken advantage of because she's not a woman who understands what the situation or the circumstances are. So Tosafot says, it's very interesting. He says that, v'yesh lomar de k'tana legamrei enu moser t'atzma lebi'ah. He says that it has to do with a number of factors here. A k'tana, if she's too young to protect herself, she's also too young to be mafkara nafsha, because she has no interest in bi'ah, she doesn't have a sexual drive. So since she doesn't have that aspect to her, she won't give herself up, not because she thinks she's a shvuya and she's going to protect herself, it's simply she has no interest. But by the time she gets to a point where she has an interest and she starts to have a sexual drive, by that time she already knows the mintra nafsha. So Tosfot says there's a correlation between the woman's needing or feeling that she wants to afkara nafsha and allow for this to happen and her ability to protect herself. And therefore, by k'tana, even though she can't protect herself, but she also doesn't have an interest in being mafkara nafsha. Once she has an interest in being mafkara nafsha, she's already old enough or cognitive enough to understand how to protect herself. And so that's how Tosafot solves this problem and says it's true no matter what the age of this shvuya is. Then the Gemara says, okay, you differentiated between shvuya and gioret, v'rami shvuya shvuya. Let us at least ask from another braita where it seems that shvuya has a different din, and that'll be the problem here. Rav Papa is, Bar Shmuel is asking of a Rav Yosef, which is the Tanya. Hagioret v'ashvuya v'ashivcha shenifdu. So again, all the classic cases, a woman who converts, a woman who's in captivity who's released, and a shifah who was redeemed or freed. So in that case, yiterot abonot gimel shanim v'yom echad, that are older than 3 years in one day. Tosafot over here notes that there is likelihood that this is not the girsa, that yiterot abonot gimel shanim v'yom echad is problematic. It does not appear in the Tosefta. It also does not appear in the parallel sugya in Yevamot. And therefore, he thinks we should eliminate it because it causes problems. by saying 3 years in one day, and it has to do with Rabbi Yehuda Shita and other places, which I'll note in a second. We'll read it with it in, but note that that little line probably does not belong here in the Braita. Now, what do you have to do? Tzrichot amtim, gimel chodoshim. They have to wait 3 months. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yossi, matir li areis v'n yasei miyad. Yossi allows them to get married right away. Now you have a problem. So forget about Gioret, forget about Shivcha. Here, Shvuya is mentioned. And it says here, with regards to Shvuya, she has to wait 3 months after she is redeemed from her captivity. According to Rabbi Yehuda, a Shvuya is b'kdushata kaima. We're not choshesh that she had Bia. So why is he here, or choshesh, that she has to wait 3 months that she did have Bia? There's a clear stira within the position of Rabbi Yehuda. Now, the reason that the Re and the Rabbeinu Tam want to take the girsa out that says above the age of 3 years in one day is because we find in other places that Rabbi Yehuda himself is not gozer tana atu gdola. In the case of a ktana, it's clear she did not become impregnated because she can't become pregnant. So if that's the case, there's no reason to wait 3 months. The only reason for a ktana to wait 3 months is a gzera atu a gdola. And we know from other places that Rabbi Yehuda does not do that. Rabbi Yehuda does not believe or gozer ktana atu gdola. That's why the lashon here of gimel shanim v'yom echad presents a problem, because it suggests that even by a ktana, Rabbi Yehuda would say this. Now, Tosafot comes up with a solution. There are cases, and we'll see how this breita is set up, where Rabbi Yehuda will be gozer ktana atu gdola versus the other cases where he doesn't say it. So Tosafot comes up with chilukim to explain it. But in the end, the best solution is to take that out of the girsa and not say gimel shanim v'yom echad, and just be talking about a gdola. And if you do that, then there's no stira in the shita of Rabbi Yehuda. So Ishtik, Rabbi Yosef had no answer. He didn't know how to reconcile this issue within Rabbi Yehuda Shita. Amalei, midei shmielacha baha? So said the questioner, Rabbi Papa Rabbi Shmuel, maybe you heard something, how do you differentiate? How do you do with this? Amalei, ochi amar Rav Sheshit, shiro'ua shenivala. The case here in this braita is that they saw that she had biyah. But once they saw she had biyah, for sure she's not a bitula, but now we have the question of pregnancy. That now you have to wait 3 months because now we're afraid she became impregnated because she was nivelet. Mar says that's a really nice answer for Rabbi Yehuda, but he hachi my time with Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi over here says she doesn't have to wait 3 months. Well, if we saw her having biyah, why does Rabbi Yossi say you don't have to wait 3 months? It should be obvious that you have to wait 3 months. Mar's answer is Amar Abba Kasava Rabbi Yossi Isha Mizana Mishameshit Bamoch Shelo Tit Aber Rabba. Now here, clearly, Rabba does not need to give this answer for himself. Rabba is definitely answering on behalf of Rabbi Yochanan. Because for Rabba, there's an easy way to explain the difference between our Mishnah and this Braita, which is that our Mishnah is talking about a case of Ein Chote Niskar, case of Knas, where we don't want the rapist to benefit from the fact that we're Choshesh, that maybe she had Biyah while she was a Shvuyah. Over here, in the case of the Braita, where we say that the Shvuyah has to wait 3 months, there's no chote niskar over here. And we said before that when there's no chote niskar claim, that over there we worry about the chashash that she had biyah. So that'll be Rabba's solution to the stira between the Braita and our Mishnah. But according to Rabbi Yochanan, who says that Rabbi Yehuda across the board says, we don't worry about a shvuyah, how do we reconcile it? So this is Rabba is helping out to explain or to help out Rabbi Yochanan Shita. So I'm Rabbi, Kasav Rabbi Yossi Isha Mizana, Mishameshi B'moch Shalot Titaber. Rabba says that a woman who is mizana, a woman who has illicit relations, she protects herself from becoming pregnant. Now, mishameshet b'moch means that she uses some sort of protection. Rashi claims that the moch is after the fact. That after she has biyah, she then puts the moch, which is some sort of soft, absorbent material, in. And by doing that, she's able to absorb the zera, the shechvat zera that was placed inside of her, and prevent herself from becoming impregnated. It's probably not a very good or efficacious way to do it. You could argue, mishamesh b'moch, is that before the fact, she put something in there to prevent herself from becoming impregnated. Now the Gemara says, bishlam agiyoret, kevin dedata li giyure mintura nafsha. By giyoret, you can make that claim. By giyoret, she knows that she's going to convert. Since she knows she's going to convert, she wants to protect herself against becoming impregnated going into that conversion. So therefore, she'll take the precautionary steps to stop herself from becoming impregnated. Shvuya nami deloyada hechemimatula. By a shvuya, she also doesn't know where they're going to take her and when she's going to get redeemed. There's a certain amount of uncertainty in the fact that she might be redeemed at any moment. She might be freed at any moment. They're taking her, they're taking her there. That uncertainty keeps her on her toes. And therefore, even if she willingly gives in to the captors and has biyah with them, she still will not move on and become impregnated because at any moment she could be freed. Shivcha nami, deshama mipi mara. Same thing with a shivcha. A shivcha who is freed. She overheard her mistress, master saying that they're going to free her. And since they're going to free her, she protects herself against having biyah at that time. Eliyotza b'shein v'ayin ma'ika l'meymar. A shivcha can go free in different ways. A shivcha can go free because she's redeemed, she is freed. Or she can go free because she was mistreated by her owner. She got damaged, she got a tooth knocked out, she got an eye knocked out by her owner. That's an automatic grounds for her to be freed. In that case, it was spontaneous. She had no way to know about that beforehand. And therefore, why would she have protected herself? And not even assuming that she is mizana. Let's just say that she's married to an eved at that time. She's allowed to be married to the eved at that time, and it has no detrimental impact because at the time she was a shivcha kananit. So why would she stop herself from becoming impregnated because she's married to the eved? Now, if she can become free and become a full-fledged Jew, she might consider not doing that because it would differentiate the zera that's born and would have been a slave versus zera that's born that would be big dusha. But here where she had no heads up that it's coming, how would she know to protect herself? And she has no reason to protect herself. Again, she has more reason to become impregnated and remain that way because she's a wife to an eved. V'chiteima, if you want to suggest, koma meila lo amar Rabbi Yossi, if you want to say that according to Rabbi Yossi, anything that happens spontaneously, he will agree that you have to wait for 3 months. That Rabbi Yossi's statement is only about cases where the individual knew or had an inkling that something might happen, and therefore they protect themselves from becoming impregnated. But if they had no clue, by the case of Shein V'ayin, where they have no clue, then maybe Rabbi Yossi would agree to the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda. If you say that, that's not the case. Why? Hari anusa umifuta. The case of rape or seduction, dimimela, that's something that, quote-unquote, is spontaneous. The woman has no way to know that it's going to happen or protect herself. V'tanya, anusa umifuta, tzichot amtin gimel chodoshim, divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda, consistent with his opinion, says that a rape victim, or a woman that was seduced, in both these cases, she has to wait 3 months before either we allow her to go back to her husband to get married because we're afraid of the possibility of being impregnated. Rabbi Yossi Matir, the Yoreisu, in Asimiyad. Again, Rabbi Yossi says you can get married right away. So here we see something where she had no forewarning that it was going to happen, and yet Rabbi Yossi still believes that right away she's able to get married. So obviously, if she had to think about this ahead of time or do this protection ahead of time, that only works when she knows it's coming. And again, that makes more sense according to the explanation that the moch she placed in beforehand because to stop the pregnancy. According to Rashi, it could still have been done after the fact. Although she wouldn't have been prepared for it. She wouldn't have had the moch there in order to absorb the shechvat zera after the fact. So she doesn't know to predict. El Amar Rabba, Kasav Rabbi Yossi, Isha Mizana, Mitapechet, Kadesh Lo Titaber. Again, we saw this in Yevamot. This idea, Rabbi says that Rabbi Yossi's reasoning is because a woman can protect herself after the fact from becoming impregnated by simply turning over. If she turns over, it'll prevent the Zichvat Zera from getting to the point where it impregnates the woman because the force of gravity will work against her. She turns over, then she spills the Zichvat Zera back out and it doesn't stay inside of her. Face down instead of on her back, so then she'll expel the shechvat zera instead of it impregnating her. Now obviously, this doesn't work so well, and that is definitely the shita of Rabbi Yehuda, that we're not so certain about the efficacy of this practice, and of course, it's even less efficacious, even though it's true that the ability of shechvat zera, which is based on that we have a certain halachot, that shechvat zera can impregnate for up to 72 hours, and therefore, a woman who's polected shechvat zera within the 72 hours, that is mitamei, because the shechvat zera is still viable within that 72 hours. That happens to be true. In all likelihood, the impregnation takes place very early on because of the fact that this semen is placed into the woman under high pressure. And that's what causes the impregnation. And then, therefore, turning over is not going to really help because the semen already reached, or the shechvat zera reached the point of where it can impregnate. And that turning over is not going to really help so much. Now, again, it might be somewhat preventative. It might be somewhat helpful, but it's not foolproof for sure. And we know for sure that this is not the best way to deal with it. But in a case where they didn't have other methods, Rabbi Yossi believes that this method is good enough that the woman who is Mizana protects herself and can even protect herself after the fact. V'idach chashinan, idach is Rabbi Huda. How come he still makes her wait 3 months? Chashina Hashema lo re'apcha yafe yafe. Maybe she didn't turn over carefully, she didn't do it so well. So Rabbi Huda blames it on the woman not being able to do it well. We could just say that the method itself is not so effective, and therefore she can become impregnated, and that's why Rabbi Huda makes her wait the gap of 3 months. And now the Gemara says, based on our Mishnah, our Mishnah says that they have kamle d'rabba minei, based on the pasuk of Eloi Yason Anoshi Anesh. Gemara says, v'ha mehocha nafka? Do we really learn it out from that case in Mishpatim, where two men are fighting, and one of them goes to give a death blow to his friend? His friend steps out of the way and he hits a pregnant woman instead. And then we make a determination. If he kills the pregnant woman, then he's on the hook for that death blow, for killing that woman. And he'll be exempt from paying for the miscarriage as well as, obviously, the damage to the woman. On the other hand, if she lives, if she is not killed by the blow, then he's culpable for the loss of the babies, the miscarriage, as well as the damage that was done to the woman. So we see there from that kamle d'rabba minei. If he's subject to a death penalty or if she dies, then clearly he's exempted from monetary payment. If she doesn't die or he's not subject to the death penalty, then he pays. So that's where we learned that kamle d'rabba minei. The Gemara says, we have a better limo, which is k'dei rishato. You are mechayev, an individual. He's only held culpable for one punishment, not two. We don't punish someone twice for the same infraction. So from there, we should have learned out also by mitah v'mamon. Well, you'd have thought, mitah mamon, it's clear that mitah is the more chamur. So we would have given him mitah, not mamon, and you could have learned that out of kidei rishato. Why don't we use that as the source? Why are we using the source in Masonia? The Gemara says, Chada b'mita mamon, Chada b'malkot mamon. It has to do with the difference. By mita mamon, we learn that out from Parshat Mishpatim, lo yason anosh yanesh. Kedei rishato, that we learn out from Parshat Kiteitse, that is for malkot and mamon, to tell you can't both get lashes and mamon. Vitzricha, and we need both limudim. Diash menina mita mamon, by mita mamon, mishum de ika ibud neshama. By mamon and mita, you're going to lose a life. But losing a life is a very extreme type of punishment. And in that sense, of course, the mamon is deferred or knocked out completely, depending on how you formulate it. But it makes a lot of sense to exempt him from the payment. On the other hand, by malkot and mamon, where the punishment of malkot, where leka ibud neshama, he's not going to die. And it's a punishment, but it's not a heavy-duty punishment. Maybe over there he should both get malkot and pay. It's not obvious just because someone is killed, he doesn't pay. So too, by malkot and mamon, he won't pay. That's not an obvious extrapolation. So emalos. In that case, I would say no. That's why I need kedei rishato. V'yash minin malkot and mamon, if you just told me about malkot and mamon, neshum delo chamir isurei. Because there, the isur is not so chamor. The infraction is not so bad, therefore it suffices with one punishment. Aval mita umamon de chamur isirei. By the case of mita mamon, where the infraction is so severe, aim alo, maybe you would give both punishments there. Because you have two aspects over here. You have the infraction itself, which is the severity of the infraction, but you also have the severity of the punishment. So both of those contribute, and we've spoken about this before in terms of formulating what kamle d'rabba minei is. Is it driven by the severity of the infraction? And that's why you only get the death penalty and not the payment? Or is it driven by the severity of the punishment? And therefore the punishment is so severe that it protects the individual from the mamon. So both of those, looking in one of those two ways, each one of them forces you not to extrapolate either to makot and mamon or not to extrapolate from makot and mamon to mita and mamon. So therefore, tzricha, I need both limudim. Now, remember, the maskana, we believe that even without the punishment itself, the person is exempt from the mamon. Even chiyuve mitot shogegim are protected from paying mamon. There is kamle d'rabba minei. So in the end, it is the severity of the infraction that is driving that parcel or part of it. And again, we said that maybe we could differentiate in these cases, depending on why you are patur from the mamon, might determine whether you are completely patur from the mamon, or whether it's just a deferral, meaning that you're patur b'dinei adam, but b'dinei shamayim, you're still chayav to make that compensation. And that might have to do with why we are protecting you, and we spoke before about differentiating between makot and mamon. When you use the terminology of g'day rishato, over there it's simply saying that one punishment, not two, but the two are really worthy, you're worthy of getting two, but the Torah says only one. So over there it's more likely that we would say, let's say y'day shamayim, you've got to pay. By the case of kamali d'rabba minei, especially in the case where the person is subject to the death penalty, there you could see the severity of the punishment wiping out the need to pay mamon at all, legamrei. Whereas, again, by shogegim, by the case where you're shogeg, there you could look at it either way. You could say, well, he's not getting the punishment, so maybe he should still be, let's say, yidei shamayim, pay the mamon, or maybe the severity of the infraction is so great that the mitar, the punishment of mitah that is associated with that, eliminates mamon from the picture entirely. Again, so you have different ways of formulating, well, in fact, how you view the necessity to pay mamon, let's say, today, shamayim. Okay, Ula Rabbi Meir, damar loke umishalem, tartalamali. We saw Rabbi Meir at the beginning of the perek. The Rabbi Meir says that in the case of malkot and mamon, you pay both, or you do both. You get both punishments. So, lamali, why do I need both of these psukim? Chada b'mita mamon. One of them is for mita mamon, which is also commonly the Rabbi Minei. And one of them is by mital malkot vitzricha, and it's not an obvious extrapolation. Diashmina mita umamon. If you talk to me that mita overrides mamon, we say commonly derabim minei mishum dechada begufei vechada bemamonei, because you're really, in a sense, giving two separate punishments. One of them affects him personally, his body. The other one affects his possessions, his money. So that's really two possessions, and that lo avdinan. By mita malkot, where the punishment is both regards to his body, ema mita richtahi. Let's just say it's a prolonged death. It's a prolonged death that starts out with malkot and ends up with a finality of being a death penalty. But it's all about his guf, and therefore it's really considered to be one large punishment rather than two distinct punishments. So v'navid bey, and therefore we should be able to do it. Viashmin and mito malkot. Had you only told me that mita malkot, you only do mita, not malkot. The tarte bigufe lo avdinan. We don't want to punish him twice on his body. Once is enough. Av mito mamon, dechad bigufe v'chad b'mamonei, emen avid bey. So then maybe if it was a punishment of his body and the monetary punishment where they're totally separate, maybe the punishment of the body can't make up for the monetary payment. So tzricha, therefore, I need both of them. Now what do the chachamim do? The Chachamim used the psukim for mita and mamon, and malkot and mamon. How did the Chachamim know that mita and malkot, that mita trumps over there? So Tosfot asked that question. For Rabbanan, malkot and mamon, umita umalkot, tarvayu nafte mikdei rishato. They learned them both out of kidei rishato. Because in the case of malkot and mamon, over there, and this Tosfot pointed out before, that there's a reason to give mamon or pay mamon in that case. By the case of malkot and mamon, we say that even though malkot are more severe, why would we penalize or punish the individual and say that he pays money? Because there's another party involved here. There's the nechbal. There's the person who got injured over here. There's the person that got hurt over here. And therefore, we might give the individual a lighter punishment in order to benefit the nechbal. So now, the question you always have to ask is, why would you ever give the lighter punishment to the person who's done wrong? Because it's Guri Adgar? We're going to give him reward for doing something? The answer in the end is that by the case of Mamon and Malkot, there's another mitigating factor, which is the receiving party of the Mamon. And for that reason, the Torah might be Mekil and give Mamon versus Malkot. On the other hand, when it comes to Mita and Malkot, it's very clear which one is more severe. Mita is more severe than Malkot. And then, on the other side of that, we have clearly no beneficiary to whether he gets malkot or mita. In that case, we have no questions. Kedei rishato, you know which punishment he's going to get if he's only entitled to one punishment? Mita. That's only because mita's chamor. That's what you'd always do. You'd always opt for the more severe of punishments when you had a choice between severe and less severe. Why by mamon and malkot do we have a different view? That's because of the injured party who we want to get compensated. So that's why Tosafot says it's obvious, according to the Chachamim, that Kedei Mishato, if you had a stira between Makot and Mitah, that we clearly give Mitah. In that case, we wouldn't have any Havamina to do otherwise. And that we learn out of Kedei Mishato. And so now the Gemara says, Velo tichu kofer lenefesh rotzeach, lomali. How come it says over there that you don't take payment for someone who murdered? Now the Gemara's Havamina right now is that this person is paying. Even though he murdered and he's subject to a death penalty, he's paying for whatever damages, whatever else he did. So Dama Rachmana, the Gemara says, no, you're reading it wrong. This is the way to read it. Lo tishko memona minei v'tiftere mikatla. The kofar that we're speaking about here is basically a bribe or some sort of blood money that he pays in order to free himself from the death penalty. That you're not allowed to do. You're not allowed to accept money in exchange for sparing his life or not putting him to death. Lo tichu kofar lanus el ir miklato. So why do I need that pasuk? We also there, at the end of Sefer Bamidbar, have another pasuk that says you may not take money when the person has to go to galut, when he kills bishogeg. Again, the Gemara is reading this, that even though he's chayav mita bishogeg, which means that he goes to galut, he still has to pay. What do you mean he still has to pay? So Gemara says, Damar Rachmana, again the Torah says, lo tishko mamona minei v'tiftrei mina galut. Again, don't accept payment in lieu of him going to galut. He can't pay off the Beit Din or pay off someone and say, here's the blood money, and I don't have to go to galut. Betray, cry, lamali. Why do I need two psukim? One about killing b'mezid, and one about killing b'shogeg. Gemara says, chad b'shogeg, v'chad b'mezid. I need one by shogeg, one b'mezid, v'tzrichi, and I need both of them. Diash meaning mezid mishum d'chamir yisurei. The reason by mezid we don't allow you to pay off and get out of being killed is because the infraction, the killing, was intentional. That's something so severe that we're not going to let you get off by paying. Avos shogeg, delo chamir yisurei. By shogeg, where the infraction is of a less of a severity, aim alone. Maybe over there we would let him pay to get out of galut. And again, paying kofar, some sort of redemption money, blood money that he pays, and that will free him from the galut. V'yashmin en shogeg, mishum delekad ibud nishama. By the case of shogeg, if you just told me the pasuk that he's not allowed to pay off to get out of galut, because over there he's not going to lose his life. He just has to go into galut and live in the ir miklat. Avo mezid ika ibud nishama, aim alone. And this is one of the major claims against death penalties, punishment death penalties, is just because one life was taken, why should we take another life? So it's over here. Maybe if we only had the pasuk by shogeg, we would say by mezid he can pay to spare his life, because otherwise he's going to be killed. There's a loss of life here. So in that case, we let him pay him the kofar for that. Tzricha. That's why I need both psukim. One by mezid and one by shogeg. Tosfot ask over here, how come we don't learn this out of the Beit Chizkiyah? We'll see them later on in this sugya. We saw them already prior, which is that the Beit Chizkiyah says we don't differentiate between shogeg and mezid. The same din applies to shogeg and mezid, and there's some sort of parallel between them, that whatever din is true by shogeg or mezid is true by the other one. If they have that, why do I need two psukim? I can just draw that parallel from the Beit Chizkiyah. The answer to that might be that that has to do with the initial punishment. That the Beit Chizkiyah is explained to us, when you're looking at the initial punishment, then shogeg and mezid are not differentiated. That means kamalei d'rabbanei applies to both of them, and there'll be no monetary punishment here. But after the fact, who says that mezid and shogeg are the same? Once we've already determined that the punishment is galut, or the punishment is a death penalty, then who says that we say there's an equivalence between shogeg and mezid, and that if I pay kofar by one, or I can't pay kofar by one, it'll affect the other? That may not be the statement of the Beit Chizkiyah. That's one way to answer it. The Rish says, lo shayach l'kushe shogeg mezid ki'ay gavna, kevin she'en pidyon shnehem shaveh. The Tosafot suggests a different answer, which is that their redemption is different, because the pidyon shel mezid, the pochon mimita, pidyon shel shogeg, the pochon migalut. He says that the kofar itself is different. The redemption, one is to save his life, one is to prevent him from going to galut. And over there you can't draw a parallel, so it's a slightly nuanced or different answer than what I just said before, but the same concept, which is that the Beit Chizkiyah just doesn't apply to this, and that's why the Gemara had to come up with a tzvichuta to explain why we need both psukim over here. And even though we do have precedence for the fact that there is a payment of kofar by cases where it was, we'll call it unintentional killing, which is where the animal of an individual kills someone else, over there the balim owners do not die, but they have to pay kofar. They actually have to pay restitution to the family or the yorshim of the individual that was killed. So we see in some instances that there is a concept of kofar. This is not a foreign concept where the Torah never allows it. The Torah does allow it in some cases, and therefore there's even a greater havamina by the case of Shogeg that we would allow for kofar because we find it in other instances where his money, his possessions murder. Then in that case, we hold the Balim accountable, but we only hold them accountable to the point that they pay kofar. We don't give them the death penalty. So we see that in a sense that he gets out of the death penalty by paying kofar in that case. It says that the animal will die, be put to death. The Balim die, but they die through paying kofar. So over there we see this concept that kofar can replace or can eliminate the need for a mitah. Right, so now the Gemara says, "Ule aretz lo yuchupar ledam asher shupach ba ki medam shofkol." This is by the Egla Arufa. The Torah makes a general statement, which is that the land, the holy land of Israel, lo yuchupar ledam asher shupach ba, will not forgive or be complacent about the fact that dam, blood was spilled in it, ki medam shofkol, until we get the murderer. Lomali, what do I need that pasuk for? Because over here it seems redundant. Of course, we're going to give the person the, number one, the death penalty. And number two is, we just said before, you're not allowed to take money to stop him from getting the death penalty. So it's pretty clear here that he's subject to a death penalty. Why is the Torah going its way to say that the only way to be mechaper for the murder is to have the murderer be put to death? That is what came out of the previous psukim. Where it says, me debayale the tanya, we need it for this braita. Minayim shenit arfai egla. How do we know that in a case where the ceremony of Egel Arufa is performed because we don't know who the murderer is, then we find the murderer, that does not exempt the murderer from the death penalty? How do we know that we don't exempt him based on that? Right, after Dam Shuvcho. Even after Egel Arufa is performed, Egel Arufa is simply a stay in the punishment. It stays the punishment and says that people will not be held accountable, or the leadership of Klal Yisrael will not be held accountable in the interim because we don't know who the murderer is. So this is a stay of that punishment for not taking care of this murder. That's what Egel Arufa does. But after they find the murderer, that's no longer true. We have to take care of the murder. You have to take care of this Rotzeach and kill him. Otherwise, you will be held accountable for that. And that's what the Tepasuk is saying. So even after the ceremony of Egel Arufa is performed, the pasuk makes it clear, the only way to clear this all up in the end is to get the murderer and put the murderer to death. If we can't find the murderer, then Egel Arufa helps to stay the situation until then. But then it says also in the parsha of Egel Arufa, again, seems redundant again, you have to eliminate the rotzeach. We need that for this braita. How do you know that the punishment of saif by the sword has to be done by the neck? Anybody who's a murderer is connected to Egel Arufa. Malahalan minatzavar. Just like by Egel Arufa, how do you do the arifata egla? By the neck. Af shufchei damim minatzavar. So too the death penalty for those that are murderers will also be at the neck. Imalalan bekupitz umimul oref. Just like over there by Egel Arufa, we do it with a hatchet. And we do it mul oref, which is below the back of the neck. So then, afkan bekupitz umul oref. So too over there by the murderer, we're gonna do it with a hatchet. And not exactly at the back of the neck, but below the back of the neck. Oref is your back of your neck. Mul oref is below the oref. So maybe over here too, you should have the same way. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rabbi Avua, Amar Kra, Va'afta the Re'acha Kamocha. You have to love your fellow Jew like you love yourself. Borolo Mito Yafa. You have to pick for him a clean and easy death. The cleanest and easiest death, first of all, is with a sword and not a hatchet. Both because of the fact that it is sharper, and therefore it's a quicker, finer death. As well as the nature of a hatchet is to break up or cut up things rather than just to slice through. And number two is, if you do it from the neck in the front, then it is much more efficacious, faster, than if you do it from the back of the neck. And therefore, Barlo Mita Yafa means you do it in this manner. You use the Egel Arufa as a general guideline, But then within that context, you need to do the best for this individual because atal reyecha kamocha. Right, so what Egla Rufa does in the end gives you the general precedent that has to be done at the neck level. So even though, as Tosafot points out, you could have said that v'atal reyecha kamocha, it would have been just as nice to stab him in the heart because that would have been a quick death. Now, it's not so clear to me that that is as quick as chopping off the head, but either way, Tosafot says v'atal reyecha kamocha would not have told you the location. It would simply tell you, just pick the fastest death, the quickest death that there is. On the other hand, Egla Rufa teaches you the location that you must do the fastest death, and that's the neck, and that's what Egla Rufa. Egla Rufa gives you that framework. How exactly it's done is governed by V'ahavta L'Reyecha Kamocha. What's very interesting over here is V'ahavta L'Reyecha Kamocha, that here, even though we're talking about a murderer, we still apply the din of V'ahavta L'Reyecha Kamocha. And that's really an amazing statement about how far V'ahavta L'Reyecha Kamocha goes, that we're even saying that if someone was in the same predicament, how would they want it done? Even though, again, we're talking about a rusher, we're talking about a murderer, nevertheless, we still invoke this principle of V'ahavta L'Reyecha Kamocha. Okay, now, the Gemara continues to ask from Psukim. It says, Kocherim, asher yecheram min adam, lo ipadeh. The Pasuk is not easy to translate, and it's actually a machlokes rishonim as to what the Pasuk is speaking about. But let us assume, Kocherim here means that a person put something into oblivion. How did he do that? So, Kocherim asher yecheram min adam. If a person put another person into oblivion, which means they killed them, then he may not be redeemed. So what does that sound? That sounds like you can't pay kofar to get out of murdering. Just so you know that this concept, if you look at the Ramban ala Torah, Ramban ala Torah, when it speaks about this at the end of Sefer Vayikra, says that this pasuk is talking about a case of cherem that we see in the Chumashim. We find it in certain places where people come to a city and say that the entire city is cherem. Now cherem means that it's all dedicated to God, it's all dedicated to Kodesh. What does that mean? That means that any of the possessions, any of the items that are found in the city are either donated to Kodesh, or burnt, or destroyed. What does that mean for the human beings that are in there? That means that they're all killed. That means that they're going to be killed. And that's really what, according to the Ramban, this pasuk is talking about, that we have a precedent for this idea that a person can make a certain sermon, what I call a human dedication to God. The human dedication to God is that they kill the individual. So, Chayim Asher Yecheram Min Adam, that is speaking about that instance. That's what the Ramban says the Pashtura pasuk is. It's an enemy that you're fighting the enemy, and they say basically, God, if you help us to conquer the city, we'll make it all cherem. Kocherem asher yacharam min adam lo yipadeh. Mibayilei l'ketanya. We need it for this brayta. Minayin leyotzei liareg v'amar echad erko alai. How do we know if someone's being taken out? They already have their sentencing for death, they're in death row, and now they're being taken out for their execution. And this individual says, the value of that individual is on me. But he uses the erech. He doesn't use demei, which is the value assessment, but rather erech, which is based on the tables in Sefer Vayikra. Minayin shelo amar klum. How do you know that he doesn't say anything? Shinor kol cherem asher yacharam min adam lo yipadeh. So it sounds like anything that where you are makdish, someone who is going to be wiped out, who's going to be killed here, lo yipadeh, there is no redemption of that. The person has no value. Since he has no value, the erechin are not relevant. Yach al af kodem shenigmar dino, Cain. You would think maybe even before he has the sentencing to death, maybe that would be the case. Or min adam v'lo kol adam. Only some people have this, but not all individuals. Ul Rabbi Chananya ben Akavya damar nerach. That says that you do have erach in there. Mipnei shedamav kitzuvim. So because there is a fixed price. Arachin have nothing to do with the true value of the individual. They're simply based on the tables that are set out in Sefer Yikra. It's age and gender of the individual determine the price. Hai kol cherem mai obilei. What does he do with that pasuk? Bibayilei l'ketanya. He needs it for this brayta. Bishmo benosh Rabbi Yochanan ben Broko omer. Lefi shematzino lemumatim bidei shemayim. Shnotim mamon umitchaper. We do find precedence for the fact that there are certain people who are supposed to die bidei shamayim, and that they are able to give compensation and mitkaper lehem shenemar, because it says in Shmot Mishpatim, this is the case that we mentioned before, im kofer yushat alav, if he makes payment restitution to the family of the victim, yochol af bidei adam keim. You would think that that's applicable even bidei adam. Tomar momar cherem min adam lo yipadeh. That any time that you have a murder or a wiping out, snuffing out of someone's life, there, by Adam, through a person, lo yipadeh, it cannot be redeemed. Ve'en li'elo mitot chamurot, shalon itna shigatan le'kapara. I can only speak about severe cases of murder where there is no kapara by shugeg. Mitot kalot, the lighter forms of mita, shenit nashik adam the kapara, that they do have kapara through their shugeg, minayin. How do I know that? Tamalomar kol cherim. So therefore, it's not just the regular cherim, but kol cherim. Now, obviously, the next question is going to be, didn't we just have that from lotikhu kofer, that you weren't allowed to take money, compensation for murder? Over here, you're seemingly saying the same thing by the case of cherim, which is that you're not allowed to take payment for protecting the murderer. We're going to leave that for tomorrow. Now, the way to explain this bright does machloket Rashi and Tosafot. We'll do Tosafot first because it's a simpler way to explain it. Tosafot says, what are the mitot chamurot? Mitot chamurot are any mita that has no kapara bikorban. Any death sentence that if it was done bishogeg, there's no korban for kapara, that's called a mita chamura. Mitot akolot are mitot that if done bishogeg, they have a korban bikapara. And therefore, what the Gemara is asking is, okay, I understand mitot chamurot, shono nitashke dan the kapara. Since it's such a severe infraction, therefore, even bishogeg, we don't provide you with kapara. Therefore, I would say no payment. Restitution will help you. On the other hand, what about the mitot akolot? These lighter mitot that their shigaga is taken care of through a korban. Maybe over there I should accept payment to exempt them. That's what it says. Kol cherim. Not just cherim, but kol cherim. Any type of death penalty that is assigned or infraction that causes the death penalty. In all those cases, you're not allowed to take payment. That's the way Tosafot explains it. Rashi explains it, really, there's really one nafkamina between them. Rashi says that anything that has kapara through shogeg includes all the cases of korban, as well as murder. By the case of murder, you also have a kapara by shogeg, you go into galut. So Rashi says the mitot ha-kolot are all mitot karet, that by shogeg they have a korban, as well as rotzeach, which has a kapara through galut. All of those are called a mitot kolot. Mitot chamurot are all punishments that have no kapara that is associated with the shogeg violation of that infraction. So that's how Rashi explains the chamurot versus the kolot. Tosfot says that it doesn't work out with the following piece of the Gemara, which is when we need lotikhu kofer as well. Because if you need lotikhu kofer for rotzeach, then according to Rashi, rotzeach was already captured in the cases of cherem and kocherem. So Tosafot leaves Rotzeach out of the picture, and then we use Lotikhu Kofer to deal with that. But on Rashi, where he already includes Rotzeach in the Braita, how does the remainder of the Gemara, which again we'll get to tomorrow, deal with Lotikhu Kofer? Why was that relevant at all? Because Rashi already covered it inside of the Braita. Okay, we're going to stop here. Two lines from the bottom of Lamed Zayin Amud Bet.